Hold up. What was that? Boring. No flavor. That was as bad as those leftovers you ate all week. Keke Palmer here. And it's time to say hello to something fresh and guilt-free. HelloFresh. Jazz up dinner with pecan-crusted chicken or garlic butter shrimp scampi. Now that's music to my mouth. HelloFresh. Let's get this dinner party started. Discover all the delicious possibilities at HelloFresh.com.
I'm Sandra, and I'm just the professional your small business was looking for. But you didn't hire me, because you didn't use LinkedIn Jobs. LinkedIn has professionals you can't find anywhere else, including those who aren't actively looking for a new job, but might be open to the perfect role, like me.
In a given month, over 70% of LinkedIn users don't visit other leading job sites. So if you're not looking on LinkedIn, you'll miss out on great candidates, like Sandra. Start hiring professionals like a professional. Post your free job on linkedin.com/people today.
Hello, and welcome to the final episode of Season 2 of Pubs, Pints, People, the camera podcast. My name, as always, is Matt Bundy, and I'm joined by Claire Phillips and Aunt Fiorillo. Hello, both, and season's greetings.
Oh, ho, 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 Mr. Bundy.
Hello. Merry Christmas, if it's not too early to say that.
It's never too early, Claire. If Selfridges can put their decorations up in August, it's never too early. season's greetings indeed, folks. Now, it's just a few weeks to go until the big ho, ho, ho Christmas is around the corner, and we really hope everyone's well and truly into their advent calendars by now, got the tree and tinsel up, and are ready and raring to go. We're going to be well and truly getting into the festive spirit ourselves this week by chatting all about Christmas brews and getting some brilliant recommendations from the wonderful Johnny Garrett of the Craft Beer Channel, and also speaking to Brock Burgess, owner and cider maker at Gospel Green.
Yeah, we're really looking forward to hearing those Christmas tipple ideas. And as Matt said, it's the last episode of the season, but have no fear, we'll be returning for season 3 in the new year. And if you want to help get involved in any way, whether you're a scriptwriter, you fancy doing some interviews or some editing, well, please let us know because we'd love to have you on board.
Now, to get us in the Christmas spirit, Camera's been working on a new cross-industry campaign. There's nothing that gets me in the Christmas spirit more than the cross-industry campaign. but actually, it's a really important theme for the campaign, working with other industry partners to highlight why pubs matter this Christmas, probably this Christmas more than ever, I would say. And I think that's kind of obvious to most of us. You know, it's something we've been talking a lot about on the podcast, but we think the government needs a reminder ahead of the new tier restriction announcements, which I believe come out tomorrow after this comes out, don't they? Yeah,
absolutely. And throughout this week, people have been writing and tweeting why they love their pub and it's important to them at Christmas time. You hear me wax lyrical all the time about the pub at Christmas especially. Now, you can have a look at those and perhaps be inspired to write your own and submit your own via the official Camera Twitter feed. It's @camera_official.
And you can also take part by sharing why your pub's important to you on social by tweeting the PM and writing to your MP, and by visiting whypubsmatter.org.uk. But do hurry, because the next tier review, as we've mentioned, is tomorrow. That's the 16th of December. We need to get those letters and emails into them really quickly. And what about you two? I mean, why is your local pub so important at Christmas? I know, Ant, it's something that you've spoken about a lot before.
Yeah, it is. And I mean, I love the community spirit of a pub at the best of times, but there's something about the festive season and Christmas where it just seems to become that little bit more intimate. I think everybody seems to make more of an effort to come down with their partners, their friends, extended family. Perhaps they're in the area visiting. And the landlords typically make the effort to pull out the mince pies, put on a bit of hot food. The drinks are flowing. And you know, if you're really lucky, I know a few of them down by my way in Bedford, especially the Devonshire Arms, they'll get a brass band in, carol sheets get handed out, and it's just such a wonderful, great atmosphere to be a part of. And it's that one time of year where it's all about indulgence, right, and enjoying yourself. And I think the pub just really comes alive for me at Christmas time, and it's gonna break my heart this year. It truly is, to not be a part of that.
Yeah, me too. I mean, it's the same as you mentioned, the carol singing in the pubs. A couple of our local pubs, you know, they're only small and they just get really just regulars who can play a few instruments and, you know, perhaps a couple who can sing, and they'll just lead a bit of carol singing, just sort of almost ad hoc, really, not an organised thing at all. And it's just so nice to be part of something like that.
I agree. I mean, let's not forget, though, you know, a pub is for life, not just for Christmas.
Yeah, absolutely. You
know? So the campaign goes on. I agree with all of what you've said. And I really hope that MPs will realise that pubs are more than just businesses. They're part of our Christmas tradition and part of our communities. And that's why I think they're most important at Christmas, because it's all about bringing people together.
Yeah.
And that's what pubs should all be about. So fingers crossed we'll be able to pop into our locals soon and support them.
Hear, hear, Mr. Bundy. Now, let's inject this podcast with a bit of festive cheer, shall we, as we listen to our volunteer Jack Taylor sitting down with Johnny Garrett to discuss his favourite festive beers and a new seasonal beer book he's putting together just for camera.
Johnny, welcome back to the podcast. We're talking Christmas beers today. It's going to be a different type of Christmas, that's for sure, but beer is still surely going to be on the menu.
Yeah, I think I account for a fairly significant part of the uptick in beer sales around Christmas in the UK. You know, I've been into beer for the last probably decade, and I would say that almost immediately it started playing an important role in my Christmas celebrations. Beer is kind of the perfect softer alcoholic beverage to have in the festive period. That's sort of taken on a new meaning recently for me, because I've started writing a book all about seasonality for Camera Books, in which there's going to be a large chunk dedicated to both festive beers and indeed just drinking around the festive season. So not those particularly brewed for it, but those that really suit it or historically have always been around this time of year.
Well, let's start with the book, Johnny. You've mentioned it. Let's start with that. What made you write this book about seasonal beers, and what are you finding out about festive beers in particular?
Well, so I wanted to write this book because, A, there's never really been a book that tackled this topic head on. It's always been this kind of cliche of, oh, well, it's getting cold now, so we'll all start drinking dark beers, which, as far as I'm concerned, and with all the research I've been doing, is still patently nonsense. Nobody really adjusts the way that they drink throughout the year until it comes to actual celebrations. So we'll all adjust to different drinks, maybe for birthdays, for Father's and Mother's Day, for Christmas, for Easter, or, you know, in January, we'll adapt how we drink because of perhaps some health concerns or trying to make up for what we drank at Christmas. Mm. So we don't actually, I think, respond drinking-wise to the actual weather, the actual seasons. We actually respond to the events that happen in those seasons and the food that comes with those seasons. So it's one removed. And I really wanted to get that point across. In terms of what I've sort of learned about that since, you know, it's involved a lot more delving into the history of seasonal drinking. Well, the book is about seasonal drinking, but really a lot of it is down to seasonal brewing. It's down to when certain beers were made, when certain beers could be made. You know, it wasn't until we really managed to, you know, get refrigeration in, which would have been in the mid-1800s or so, that we could start to affect the temperature at which beers were fermented. So all over Europe, generally over the summer, we wouldn't be brewing any beer at all. We might find a cold place to store some fermentations. So there seems to be this really long lineage of drinking particular beers at particular times of year, because that, historically, is when they would have been brewed or when they would have been released.
And so when I think Christmas beers, or when I think sort of wintry beers, I do naturally sort of go towards those darker ones that you mentioned before. Why is that? Why am I naturally drawn to these darker beers in these dark, cold months?
Well, there's a couple of reasons for that. The two regions of the world that were super into Christmas, or I guess deep winter beers, would have been firstly Scandinavia, so Norway and Sweden. They had a long history, long before, even before Christianity, but also before Christmas was invented as a concept. And so there was this rich history of feasting around that time of year already, particularly in Norway. And actually, there were laws that meant that you had to brew beer around that time, because that is when you would be able to produce the best beer, and you could share that with your seasonal workers and stuff like that at that time of year. And they were called Yule beers. So Scandinavia has this rich history of it, and then Belgium has it as well. Basically, they also really latched onto this theory. And actually, weirdly enough, Stella Artois was a Christmas beer, one of the original and most successful ones in Belgium. I think that would have been about 1920 when that first came out. And it was supposed to be a richer, maltier, pale lager that was good for the seasons. But I think the combination of those two brewing nations, who are very famous for their darker, richer, higher ABV beers, has kind of influenced that notion that we drink roastier malts, we drink higher ABV. You know, I think people think that Christmas beer is a bit of a commercial cash-in, and to make it feel Christmassy, they've added some spices. But that kind of multi-depth and higher ABV is definitely from the historical brewing side. And then, of course, there's the whole element about the food that starts coming out. So around Christmas, obviously, we traditionally eat turkey nowadays, but that's only been the case for a couple of decades. Before that, it would have been very much stuff, darker meats, root veg that we'd recently picked during harvest, and stuff that we've perhaps been aging and protecting from the warm heat over the summer. So either it's cured meats or it's stuff that we've put into stews. So it sort of suits the food, and it also suits the nations that they've come from.
That isn't to say that there hasn't been a few disastrous Christmas beers, though. Like you say, they often have these spices in them, and sometimes that doesn't always go down too well.
Yeah, it's an interesting one, the idea of adding spices to beer. Obviously, that has a rich history to it as well. Belgium's been doing it for centuries. Gruit is a style of beer where instead of using hops, you'd have used herbs and spices to improve the flavours, maybe mask some off-fermentation flavours back from when we didn't really control our fermentations or weren't able to. So we've got a rich history of using spices and herbs and fruits and peels in our beer. And obviously, you can end up with, you know, kind of too many cooks kind of situation. That's not to say that adding lots of different things can't be great in cooking, but generally less is more. So a lot of the great Christmas beers will use small quantities of lots of different things or larger quantities of one or two things. But yeah, I mean, famously, brewers have taken Christmas beers way, way too far.
So what should be the go-tos? What kind of flavours do you think, in your opinion, suits that time of year?
You know, something that I drink quite a lot of at Christmas is Hefeweiss, because A, it's got that clovey, banana-y, caramelly kind of flavours that I think are very seasonal. But it's also got this pale body. It's actually great with, you know, if you're going to have a turkey sandwich, a Hefeweiss is a brilliant match, particularly if you've got some cranberry in there that's going to have some acidity. It's also fantastic just with a roast dinner, although actually with a roast dinner, I always have a bottle of Saison Dupont. So actually, I do end up drinking sort of Belgian and German styles in particular, which seems a bit strange. You know, the classic roast is a very British tradition. I love a classic bitter, like a Coniston or something like that with a roast. But when it comes to the additional flavours you get at Christmas, things like cranberry sauce, things like bread sauce, I actually find that something a little bit paler and a little bit spicier can be much nicer, whether that spice comes from the actual addition of spices or from the use of a Belgian or German ale yeast.
So it's a cold winter's night. You've spoken about going with a meal there, but if you're just sort of maybe thinking without food, what kind of thing would you go for?
When it's a really cold evening and I want something that's going to be, you know, warming, that I'm going to savour, that I'm going to enjoy, if I'm going to have a couple of them, then it's ESB every time. But also, I mean, the thing that I love to drink around this time is a barrel-aged imperial stout. As a bit of a bourbon lover myself, it's this perfect mix of being able to have those big, heady, boozy flavours, that balance of vanilla and of caramel. It is really what I'm searching for. But in Imperial Stout, we can add roasty warmth, we can add licorice depth, we can add a lovely coffee or chocolate kind of note to that bourbon, and at the same time reduce the ABV. So nursing a healthy glass of Imperial Stout is what I love to do. Or a barrel-aged barley wine if I want something a little bit maybe sweeter and a little bit more kind of sticky, particularly if I'm having a cheese board, which is an overly frequent occurrence when it comes to Christmas.
And obviously this build-up to Christmas is always a massive time for breweries. It's a really good chance for them to make some money. But this year, more so than ever, because of so much lost time, how important is it that we go out there, we support our local breweries, we support our local pubs this Christmas, and buy some Christmas beers as gifts for people or just to drink ourselves?
You know, this is the time when pubs would make significant amounts of their yearly profit. Particularly in rural areas, you know, these pubs are making probably a third, maybe even half of their profits in the last sort of 2 months of the year. So the fact that they're not going to get to do that because of the crisis that we're in is terrifying for these pubs, which are already under huge other strains that aren't related to COVID. So the best thing that we can do, absolutely, is to support those businesses in every way we can. And that means not going to supermarkets to buy your beer. It means going to the independent bottle shops and pubs and breweries. Pubs are suffering now, but it's nothing like how they're going to suffer in the next couple of months. That's when the government funding is going to completely disappear. And they're really going to need that cash flow at Christmas. So if you can buy to take away, or if you can safely support them, if you're in the right tiers coming up to Christmas, please, please, please do, and do it responsibly, and buy and tip as well. That's super important. It's not just about the survival of these businesses. It's about other people managing to have a good Christmas themselves and managing to pay their rent. So I will be going to the pub whenever I can, and I'll be following the rules to the letter. And whether I'm buying takeaway or whether I'm drinking in, I'm going to be tipping not 10%, but 20, 25%. Because that's the only way that these people who have barely worked this year and would have much rather worked are going to be able to make up some of the losses they've seen.
Yeah, brilliant, Johnny, brilliant. I'm going to give you another opportunity to talk about that book. How far down the line of producing this book are you? When can we read it?
Well, if my editor's asking, I'm nearly done. but if I'm being honest, I've been trying to write this book. I've taken the approach of trying to write about the season at the season I'm in, because what I don't want to do is let, you know, either rose-tinted glasses talk about, you know, that summer all I drank was delicious German-style Hellers, when actually I drank quite a lot of IPA and the odd classic bitter. I want to make sure that I'm actually talking about what I'm drinking, because it's quite a personal book to some extent. What I'm doing is taking my own experiences and trying to extrapolate that out to everybody else and try to talk to chefs and to brewers and to publicans and see how they see it. So, you know, I've been to the hop harvest in September to chat to hop growers. I went to the cider harvest because there'll be a chapter on cider in there. So I'm trying to stick to the season. So basically right now I'm writing November's chapter, and next month I'll be writing December's. And obviously there'll be some bleeding into different points, but basically it means that I'm about a third of the way through the book right now. And I'm sure it'll all fall apart with the final weeks as I'm madly trying to get over the deadline. But generally I'm trying to keep it as sort of chronological as possible.
Sounds brilliant, Johnny. Sounds absolutely fantastic. Final thing, the Christmas dinner's on the table. With that Christmas dinner, what's the drink you're going for this year?
Hey, well, can I say three?
Go on then.
Okay. So, yeah. So I'll be starting probably with something really dry, something really fruity that will go with we always have a fish course. From growing up, my mum always did this delicious salmon mousse. So with that, I'd always have something like a Belgian whip, the driest one I can find because the sweetness isn't so perfect with fish. I'll then, like I said earlier, I'll have a Saison de Pont with the main meal. I think that nothing goes better with all the different elements, you know, honeyed parsnips, cranberry sauce, bread sauce, turkey, crispy roast potatoes, and it will cut right through a nice rich gravy. Saison de Pont is amazing for that. And then for pudding, I'll be having mince pies. I don't love a Christmas pudding, so I always have mince pies. And with that, I'll 100% be having either a Belgian double or an English barley wine. I'll have both in the fridge. It's which one I have first.
Fantastic, Johnny. I wish I was coming round to yours, it has to be said. Thank you very much for joining us on the podcast. And hopefully we might hear from you again in the future.
Thanks for having me.
Well, that was really interesting. It's so true that people do change their drinking habits throughout the seasons. I'd never really thought about it like that, that yeah. It's not so much, you know, we're responding to the weather or the seasons themselves, but also events at that time of year.
Now, I don't know if it's the power of suggestion, but I certainly prefer my darker beers once the weather gets cold and the days get shorter. Mm. And maybe there is something in it, because apparently the concept of seasonal drinking seems to have come partially from Scandinavia, where obviously, you know, the days are very short in winter, yeah, aren't they? Yeah. Many of the best things do, obviously, flat back furniture.
Indeed.
Jan Molby.
ABBA.
ABBA, seasonal drinking, yeah. And they actually apparently still sell Christmas beer, which they call Julol, I believe it's pronounced. Tweet in with a phonetic pronunciation. They actually still sell that in Sweden and lots of the Scandinavian countries too. And I like the fact there's even a non-alcoholic alternative that's called julmust, which is a lovely word, isn't it?
Yeah,
and
yeah.
Apparently that's a spiced fizzy drink. So they love a seasonal drink. It doesn't matter if it's got alcohol or not.
Well, I must say, Mr. Bundy, I'm very impressed with your Scandinavian knowledge, sir, and I couldn't agree with you more. Now, let's talk about those winter spices in beer, shall we? What do you guys think of them? Because they work really well in foods, you know, cakes, ginger biscuits, even meat and veg. And you've also got mulled wine and cider. But beer, Do we draw a line? How do you? Where are you at with this, you two?
Yeah, I'm not a huge fan of some spiced beers. I mean, there's one or two in particular that that spring to mind where I've vowed never to drink them again. But you know, sometimes, I mean, I was drinking a Christmassy one the other day that did have a slight spicy sort of taste to it. And that was okay. Again, it was a Christmassy beer. So perhaps I was thinking, oh, Christmas, it's all right to be spicy. But generally, depending on what the spice is, the main spice, I'm not that keen.
Yeah, yeah. What about you, Matt?
I'm a sucker for it, to be honest. At Christmas time, I always go for the seasonal ales anyway. But and the amount of times I've had something called Rudolph's Nose or Santa's Little Helper or something like that, you know, it always catches me in the pump clip when I come in.
Yeah.
And if I see one that's like a kind of a 3D, especially flashing Rudolph nose.
I'm pretty sure I've had that flashing Rudolph nose one as well from time to time.
It catches me. It's the art of branding. But so maybe it's the terroir, you know, you're drinking in a Christmas theme pub. But to me, they do taste rather special. Although I bet you any money I've had it. In January, or probably a day after Christmas, I go, oh, what is this?
Yeah, I totally understand what you both mean. I suppose that there is the attraction of it being that time of year and why the devil not indulge. And I agree with you as well, Claire. There are some I think the cloves, especially for me, I've had some beers where they've just over-indexed on the cloves, and it's just like, I don't know, some kind of medicinal mouthwash taste to it. If I go for one, I'll often go by the half just to tread carefully, and I'll also bear in mind what I'm eating. Because I find that those kind of seasonal beers work really well when paired together with something delicious. Which actually, given the circumstances we all find ourselves in, if you've got a pub near you open, you've got to have a substantial meal anyway. So, you know, pair it up and give it a go.
Johnny has already reiterated how important it is that we support our locals this season, because Christmas really can be make or break for many pubs and breweries. And it's a shame that so many, especially the wet-led ones that don't serve food, are missing out. But actually, I was really heartened to see that still a lot of Camera branches are choosing their pubs of the year. I saw a press release just the other day from the West Suffolk branch. Their pub of the year is Oaks Barn in Bury St Edmunds. And, you know, it's great that pubs are still getting support from Camera branches. Maybe they can't get as much support in person in the pre-Christmas run-up, but branches are out there supporting and promoting pubs, which is brilliant.
They totally are. And don't forget to reach out to your branch as well, folks, if you need to find out what's going on. And maybe you can help with some of that voting of awarding those local pubs. Back onto that interview as well, I really agree. And I thought Johnny had a great suggestion about tipping, if you can afford it, to help others out this season. I mean, it's not something we're particularly accustomed to in this country, but what we are at, I do find, as a nation, is very charitable. You only have to look at the concerted effort as a nation this year throughout the COVID pandemic and what we've done voluntarily. But, you know, it could be a lifesaver for some of those people working in the pubs at the minute. So if you can tip, do tip.
Yeah, actually, in my town, Berkhamsted, somebody's organised a buy a pub a pint, or buy a pub a cocktail, or buy a pub a bottle, depending on what you can afford. He's done a campaign for that just to keep the independent pubs going. And I know there's a lot of that going on in towns across the country. So I think every little helps.
I was reading something the other day about all of the different routines that people have. And it's amazing to see how many people are starting to create their own little takes on that and nuances. It seems that Sue's suggestion this week has taken us back to a more traditional Christmas main with a recipe for festive pheasant, which is very nice. And in this, she suggests using a dark spicy Christmas ale with plenty of spice and stuffing thrown in to create what sounds like a stunning Christmas meal. So if you haven't planned your dinner yet, or you're in the process of looking at what all the chefs do, why don't you check out our What's Brewing recipe, because Sue is an absolute craftsperson in the kitchen. She's great in there. So have a look at that pheasant recipe if you're looking for something different this year.
If you are looking at What's Brewing for this one, don't forget you do need to plan ahead. Don't start thinking, oh, I'll leave this till about 10 o'clock on Christmas morning and then just put it in the oven, because actually it requires leaving the bird in the beer mix overnight before you cook on Christmas morning. And I've certainly been caught out in the past with following a recipe where it says, do such and such and such, leave overnight.
Yeah, oh, I've done that before. Yeah. Oh, no! Yeah.
So if you're organised, this sounds amazing.
It certainly does.
Now, if anybody's struggling for ideas for festive brews to have during, is it the 5 days we get with the family in the reception? Who knows?
Yeah,
23rd to the 27th. You can be in a bubble with people, I think.
Do check out Sue's list, which is on a recipe on What's Brewing, because there's plenty of stunning festive brews there. And I'm sure there'll be some of there that you won't have had before. So some real treats.
Have you considered, and I'm sure there's one person around this table who has considered, a table cider this year? Because we're going to hear from Alison Tafts, who's the owner of the Hop Inn in Hornchurch, as she sits down with Brock Burgess, who's owner and cider maker at Gospel Green.
I'm Alison Tafts and I'm the landlady of the Hop Inn micropub in Hornchurch. And one of the products that we sell an awful lot of is one of our favourite ciders, the amazing Gospel Green sparkling cider. And I'm happy to say that I'm a good friend of Brock, who is the producer and brains behind this amazing elixir. And he's agreed to jump on this podcast with us. And we're going to have a chat about why Gospel Green is great for a celebration for this time of year, but also just a chat in general about celebration drinks. Hi, Brock.
Hi, Alison. Good to hear from you. And thanks very much indeed for having me.
That's a pleasure. So tell us a little bit about Gospel Green and why it is the perfect celebratory drink, if you will.
Well, Gospel Green is a magnificent British product made in Hampshire, and it's a cider made exactly like our French cousins across the channel make. We just make it in a champagne way. So it comes in a 75cl bottle, double fermentation, so it's got a beautiful, elegant fizz to it, much like any decent champagne. And it, you know, it's really for sharing with friends and celebrating life and success. Commiserating. It's just a really nice thing to have. And you and I have shared many a glass or two over the years I've known you.
We have. And you have your classic Brut Gospel Green, don't you? Which is that gorgeous kind of golden colour. But you've also created some other variations which people may be interested in.
Yes, indeed we have. So the Brut is our signature product, and that was created by the wondrous James Lane, who founded Gospel Green back in 1990. And that's really just a sort of ode to a real classic champagne method. And we use culinary apples, apples that you would buy in your local supermarket, and our cooker in that is the Bramley. So that gives you our sort of signature drink. We've then got, as you say, some other little delectations in the stable. And the one that I love is the rosé, which is a real game changer in that people think it's an English sparkling wine. It does not suggest cider at all. So it's fantastic when you hear people saying, I can't believe this is cider. Are you kidding? And I go, yeah. And it's brilliant to see them go, goodness gracious me, what is this? And then you surprise them. And we've thrown in a couple of fab limited editions. One is called the Kentish, and we teamed up with wondrous cider business called Kentish Pip and Sam Mount. And we got a really special vintage secret cider from them that we've put in our dosage, and we've got that, and that's a really nice, dry, elegant beast. And then a rather cheeky one for us is we've gone down the route of fruit cider, but this one is just totally different. We have an extremely tasty little bit of Scottish raspberry dosage in this, so basically it takes up about 4% of the bottle. So it's not a recordalic where you're getting a lot of muck and water. This is the finest you can get, part of your five a day, I would say. And it just sort of gives a nod to what's going on out there, but at a sort of classic, elegant end of the scale.
We sell a lot of your rosé. How is that turned into a rosé, Brock? What is added to convert it from that beautiful golden Brut into the rosé version?
Well, what we do is we take our base ciders, which are obviously double fermented, as I mentioned earlier, and, you know, sort of when we disgorge, it's at that point that we can play around with what's in there. And we put in a beautiful and elegant Pinot Noir that we get from our European cousins, and a little dosage goes in, just the right amount to give it that fabulous sort of Bandol South of France rosé colour, a little tiny hint, and it absolutely massively changes the mid-flavour of that cider, which is a real surprise to people.
Yeah, it's fantastic. We enjoyed a little bottle of the Gospel Green Rosé on Christmas morning. It was absolutely superb last year, so I'm wondering what to choose this year.
Well, I'll be virtually drinking a bottle with you, Alison, but you've now got Brut, Rosé, Kentish Pip or the Raspberry to try. In fact, one for every course of your Christmas lunch.
This is so true. What a great idea. And as well as obviously you've got beautiful bottle with the cork and you've got that wonderful sort of moment of popping that cork and getting the celebration going, how else do you like to enjoy your Gospel Green? I'm guessing you drink a fair bit of it. I can imagine you will because you lovingly make it. So how else do you enjoy your Gospel Green, Brock?
Well, I think Gospel Green's one of those sensationally versatile drinks. You can make beautiful Aperol spritz with the Brut, you know, substitute your Prosecco and bung in the Gospel Green Brut. And that's a little bit like taking the lemonade out of a Pimm's and popping in tonic for a slightly more elegant, refined, mature flavour. We make an absolutely beautiful French 75. I do a champagne cocktail with the Brut, which is quite fun. And it's just one of those drinks that people can sort of fiddle around with. They can pop it in any real substitute you would have, sparkling wine, Prosecco or champagne or cava. So it's nice. And then, of course, it's beautiful in its own. The rosé, I would always say, you know, just have that on its own. It's there. It's to sing in your mouth and sort of cheer you up and buoy you along if you've had a bad day. The raspberry's fun. And that's one that we like to sort of throw at people and say, well, hang on a second, we can make it good. And Kentish Pips a surprise because it's got the most extraordinary length in the middle. And again, the Kentish is one you can play around with. If you like making cocktails, substitute any champagne or fizzy wine product for the Kentish and you'll be absolutely over the moon with what you get.
Yes, yeah, we're big fans of Kentish Pips cider because obviously they're not very far from us at the Hop Inn.
Absolutely.
So we have their ciders as well. But yeah, no, it's great to have you two together in that beautiful bottle. So apart from your Gospel Green, what other styles or examples of ciders can we enjoy at celebrations? What do you think, Brock? What have you enjoyed?
I think for me, it's, you know, there's an awful lot of cider out there being made across the UK, Scotland, all the way down to England and everywhere in the middle, even Wales, I believe. And it's artisan product and you can drink it like you would wine. Cider is one of those fabulous things that it goes beautifully with food and in many respects slightly better than wine. So you've got some fantastic things made by, of course, Tom Oliver. Mm. You've got amazing products, you know, made abroad. This is a fantastic Brandland cider. They do an amazing ice cider I really like after a meal with my cheese. And then there are those beautiful, elegant dry ones from Herefordshire, Once Upon a Tree. And we've obviously mentioned Kentish Pip. It's just a cornucopia of taste sensations out there for people to explore.
Yes, I've been lucky enough to try the Brandland cider from Sweden and they make some gorgeous ice ciders. So yeah, if you're looking for something to round off a meal, trying something like an ice cider. And as you say, Simon Day at Once Upon a Tree, also some amazing ice ciders and ice perries.
Yes.
With pear.
Yes, yes.
In Herefordshire. So yeah, some great.
Absolutely. And not forgetting Little Pomona and the stuff that they're doing there. And then of course, if people want to go for gold and get something a little stronger, they can always go for a little bit of apple brandy, which is always lovely. Lovely at the end
Somerset
of a meal.
Cider brandy from Julian Temple.
Absolutely. Absolutely. Yeah, absolutely.
I'm a big fan of the 10-year-old of that, and we eat that at the pub as well.
Yeah.
And actually, you know,
mulled cider, love it to bits. I think I would probably say, and maybe the listeners would agree, you don't want to be using a nice premium artisan cider to do a mulled. Just get a run-of-the-mill canned cider and utilise that. We've tried Gospel Green. It does pan out to be quite expensive by the time you sort of pour the amount in you need. It is good, though. I will not deny that. But we're a fizzy celebratory drink. So keep the still stuff from Herefordshire and bung in your sugar and cloves and things and mull that. But I was going to say that with you talking about Julian Temperley, for that champagne cocktail, use their absolutely fantastic cider brandy with Gospel Green, Angostura and a sugar cube and off you go.
That sounds amazing. Yeah, that sounds amazing. I was going to put in a word for Turner's Cider in Marden in Kent, who make an apple pie cider, which we have sometimes. And that works really well if you warm it up. So
yes,
that might fit the bill instead of having to go to, you know, putting the spices and things in yourself. And absolutely, I would be a bit shocked to use Gospel Green because for me, it's it's far.
Well, you know, people can do what they want as long as they buy it.
Now, our listeners will have heard definitely that you've got a wonderful Scots accent, Brock. And obviously,
all right, yes,
we know you come from that background and there's some whiskey links back in your family somewhere. So apart from wonderful cider, for Christmas and Hogmanay and New Year, any other sort of treats that you can recommend for people to try?
What treats can I recommend for people to try? Well, I think that, you know, it's all about personal choice. For me, I waken up on Christmas morning and I will have a Buck's Fizz or a Mimosa for our American cousins, and I will have that with Gospel Green and freshly squeezed orange juice. You know, I did throw Gospel Green in again, I'm sorry, but it's just so good. It's so good. And you can sling in a little bit of Campari in there if you want to sort of brighten it up. And that's just nice. I think on Christmas Day, we'll be going down the route of, you know, our traditional red and white wines. We will have champagne. There will be cognac at the end. But I think to get me through the stress of cooking the Christmas lunch, there will be a very nice little single malt whiskey. And for me, my personal favourite is Glendronach with a few beads of water. And that will alleviate any stress as I battle with the turkey and duck.
Wow. I mean, certainly you've sold me. I think that sounds like an amazing combination of drinks.
Oh, that does sound good, doesn't it? I bet Mr. Bundy, our cider expert, is thinking, you know, he's got this sorted here.
I absolutely agree with the idea of a table cider, especially if you get a lovely, lovely bottle. You know, there's a bit of theatre to it. You know, you can pop the top of it. I've actually in the past had a Breton cider with a Christmas lunch, which worked particularly well, just because you get the kind of the tall bottle, you know, that looks a bit nicer as a centrepiece. But yeah, I think this season I'll definitely be serving a selection of my ciders that I've acquired over our last order's tasting over the last year. I'll be giving a kind of an end of season review with my family.
Very good. Will you be in your smoky jacket with your pipe as well?
Absolutely. Just talking through each one, you know, pretending that you're there, you know, that I'll be talking to thin air, pretending I'm talking to Aunt Claire and Katie. They think I'm a bit weird in my family, but that's how we get through it.
Well, I might have to have a look at these ice ciders that they were talking about, because they sound like the perfect alternative to something like a sparkling wine and various seasonal cocktails. It might be a nice change to share these at the table instead of a wine or afterwards as a cocktail.
Yeah, it's something that I remember Katie talking about in season one when she went to the Little Pomona Orchard. She was talking about that champagne bottle, that champagne cork cider, and that gentle sparkle. She spoke very highly of it. And do you know what? You might have even converted me here, but we shall see. Let's move on to our archive dive, where we're staying in with the season, but we're just going back a few years to 1987 with the article "Winter is Warming Up at the Bar." Love it.
Yes, I think we all know publicans do an amazing job dressing their pubs for Christmas. You know, I love seeing the twinkling lights and all the tree, everything all beautifully done. And getting in the holiday mood matches perfectly with their festive ale offerings. And it was no different back in 1987. And this article details the fantastically named Warrington's Winter Warmer. Love that alliteration. And it's described as an entirely experimental brew at the time, as a kind of well-loved rich ruby beer, popular throughout, and they talk as well about a few other beers for the season.
And there is an element of caution featured though on the same page, because the article for Holden's Black Country XL, Holden's seasonal extra strong beer, do be careful because a pint is equal to approximately 5 single scotches. Cool. That is something strong.
That is the thing you want with a substantial meal if you're only allowed one drink, isn't it? It's like, I'll have a Scotch egg and one of them.
Well, I tell you what, I don't know whether we've got anything that strong. What are we having for our last daughters? Let's say it's on Christmas Eve. What's our perfect drink for that?
I've had to try several to come to a conclusion here. I was lucky enough to be visiting the North Norfolk coast a little while ago. There's a fantastic shop in Sheringham called The Giddy Goat, which just sells beers from Norfolk. So I stocked up and I've tried. We sort of had a mini beer festival at home to try and pick our favourite Christmassy beer. I did try the Tinsel Toes from Woodford's, which is their Christmas beer, and I liked it. But I'm afraid it was just pipped at the post by the Why Not Brewery in Norwich, who have a beer called Chocolate Nutter. It's 5.5%. It's been a champion bottled beer of Norfolk Camera branches in the past. And I think that was my favourite sort of dark, wintry, Christmas Eve-y beer. That's the one I'm going to go for.
Oh, yeah, that sounds good. A nice deep drink. Like you, Claire, I've done, in the name of research, a few different samples to get myself ready for them. And my Christmas Eve ale this year is going to be coming from the Papworth Brewery. And it's very suitably titled Three Wise Men. So as you can imagine, the bottle's got a picture of three wise men in silhouette on the back of camels on the way to what I assume is to deliver something delicious. And the beer doesn't let itself down. It's well, really well balanced, dead delicious. Not, you know, it's not in your face with the spices or anything like that.
It's not in the life of Brian sense, led by a star, led by a bottle more like, is it? Not those three wise men.
Yeah, it's not, I don't think it's them three wise men, but it's absolutely delicious, and that's the one I'm going for. What about you, Matt?
Well, I've kind of got two last orders this week. The first one is I'm actually taking a little break in Cornwall right at the moment. I was speaking to you, and it's like summer down here. It's absolutely amazing and sunny. So I've actually gone back. I let it slip a bit early on Twitter as well that I'm trying a Verdant Brewing Company. They've got a lot of wonderfully designed beer cans, and from the set, I'm having one called Bloom at the moment. But it's very summery, very fruity. So I do feel a bit ashamed. So I think if we're looking forward to Christmas Eve, for me, I do like a mulled cider. But the tricky thing with mulling cider is that I don't want to throw away one of my absolutely excellent ciders and kind of to taint it by putting some mulling in there. So I always face this dilemma of I've got my good ciders and I've got my ciders that I give to my dad or I give to the mulling, you know. But so I'm going to have to go a little bit more master, I'd like to say. But I would say that a Sheppey's organic cider is, through a process of elimination, the perfect kind of confluence between that, in that it's lovely on its own, but it's also not so hard to get hold of that I can still put it into the mulling pot and still have some left over for the next day. So I'm going to say a mulled cider on a Christmas Eve is perfect for me.
So if you've had your Three Wise Men beer, maybe we should have a Three Wise Podcasters mulled cider by the sound of it.
Well, I think so. Get it made up, Sheps, if you're listening.
Absolutely. Wassail, everyone. That's what we've got to say this time of year, haven't we? I'll tell you what, I mean, they sound delicious. We're going to have a great Christmas. And I want everybody to let us know on the old Twitter, at PubsPintPeople, what are you celebrating with this Christmas? And remember to tell us why your local pub matters to you. Remember that camera campaign. We'd love to hear from you on all counts.
We would. And don't forget to tune back in the new year. We'll be taking a short break now to spend some time with our friends, family and loved ones. And we hope that you'll get the chance to do the same. And when you do join us in the new year, we'll be back with more fantastic interviews and stories to look forward to.
I don't think any of us are sad to see the end of 2020, though. So until then, Merry Christmas to you.
Merry Christmas.
Just before you go, the camera podcasts are put together by staff and volunteers around the country and recorded by people in their own homes and offices using the internet. So, things go wrong, the tech can break down, and tongues occasionally get tied. Here's a few outtakes that the podcast elves saved for Christmas, just for you.
Hello, and welcome to the final episode of season two of the camera... Hang on, that doesn't make any sense, does it? The final season two of... This is a good start, isn't it?
Strong start.
Strong start. Let's go again. Here we go. Okay.
And we are ticking and recording.
Here we go. Matt Bundy starting us off. Let's go. Here we go.
Episode 19, The Phantom Menace. And we do hope everyone's well and truly getting into their advent calendars by now, surely. I hope you've got the trees up and the tinsel. And let me start.
Hang on. The dog has started to try to escape from the room.
Okay, no worries.
With banging the door, but hang on. I'm going to let her out. Because,
yeah, go for it.
Look, you can't put your bed there, can you? Hey? If you don't want to stay in here, go out. You're not coming back in. Go on, out you go. Don't annoy John. Go on. John, where is he? Is he up the stairs? He's up the stairs, isn't he? You go up the stairs, good dog. Right, sorry about that.
I was just saying, the way that you speak with a dog is just how I speak to my son. It's hilarious. Is Mummy in the other room? Mummy's in the other room, isn't she? Go and see Mummy.
Yeah, she said she started with a separate veggie menu with lots of choices such as chili, vegetables and pulses, hazelnut and mushroom loaf, Neapolitan pew.
That might be. Is that pie? Pew? I don't know.
Pie? That's going to be a pie.
Sorry, this
that
isn't
definitely. Me. That definitely can't be anything but pie.
I promise that wasn't me. I promise that.
Well, that was really interesting. It's so true that people do change their drinking habits throughout the seasons. I'd never really thought about it like that, that it's not so much, you know, we're responding to the weather or the seasons themselves, but also events at that time of year.
Oh, Matt's gone away, it says. Oh. at least you finished the line before he disappeared.
Yeah.
He'll come back on now. Every now and then he does have an intimate problem with his...
Is it your internet? Wi-Fi dropping out or something? Yeah. We're doing so well.
We're on a roll. Oh, absolutely. I think the way that great put your teeth in. Totally. I think that, you know, non-alcoholic... Come on, put your words in.
Fantastic, and the cheeses were great too. My top choice was Siren's twin-flamed classic. Sorry. But my top choice was their twin-flamed... But my top choice was their Twin Flames Classic Red IPA. To be honest, I just want to reel off a list. There's so many opportunities to mispronounce things. You know, that is. I can't even say mispronounce. But mispronounce! It's like, oh, dear me.
It just felt a little bit, oh, you know, we know it's a bit shameful. So I think
it's rubbish,
just go for it. Just say it as you've written it.
Utter bollocks.
I mean, it wouldn't go that far. It just felt a bit waffly.
Yeah, it was, wasn't it? Bollocks, Matthew. All right. So we're going to...
I've just come out of my line to say she's sorted out the menu herself. She's taken the initiative. I said it... Yeah.
All right, so that's where we're going to edit it. Good luck, editor. So I hope you enjoy it. Here's this week's Desert Island Beer.
Desert Island Beer.
Desert Island Beer. Desert Island Beer.
Desert Island Beer. Desert Island Beer. Beer, 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 beer.
It's time for us to dive into the archive. Did we do the jingle for it? Who knows? I'll do it myself. I'll do it live. Archive dive.
Okay. Cool. Desert Island Beer.
No. Desert Island Beer. Desert Island Beer.
Sounds like a younger Boris Johnson. But we're not allowed to be political, are we? No, sorry. Yeah. Can they edit that out? That was terrible.
Yes. Note to post.
Edit it out. Remove Boris. Okay. We lost a lot of the benefits, and it's only been exacerbated by COVID.
Of a series on how cider is made from Gabe Cup. On this week's recipe, to at Pubs Pints Pipple, it's... Pipple?
Pipple.
Pubs Pints Pipple.
At Pubs Pints People, put my teeth back in. We'd love to see what you come up with and hear your thoughts.
Hold on, I just have to cough. Okay.
Pubs Pints Pipple.
Cool. Is Ant still here? Ant is muted. Ant, you're muted. Why is he doing?
He's gone.
I just realised that he didn't say anything for a bit.
Oh.
Next to his name, it says muted, so I don't know what's going
on. Oh well, at least he's not disconnected. That would be worse.
Hopefully, it will behave.
Okay, we're back, Dave.
Yeah, you know, special charity brews aren't a new phenomenon. Phenomenon. Tip of the tongue, teeth, and the lips. Let's do it again. Ding, 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 ding.
Brilliant.
Lovely, jubbly. Right, both of you, honeys. What are we doing? Oh, I can't say that.
And we'll be chatting with what?
Oh.
Hello.
You've gone. Hello.
Oh, no.
Oh, no.
Matt's come back, off. Matt.
Matt, return to us now.
Oh, he's actually dropped out.
Oh, no. Sound good. We're rattling through this.
Yeah.
I always get nervous when we do this, but it's because we're just genuinely awesome now, isn't it? Let's just get over it. We are just amazing now.
We are, aren't we? Sorry, I just completely messed that up. I was just going, yep. Yeah, we are. This is going to be hard work. Sorry, I'll take it from anything. Hang on.
Yeah, go up.
I think the only person who's like my steady fan is my mom, to be honest. Even my husband is like, no interest. I'm like, don't you want it? He's like, I don't care about beer. I'm like, you care about me.
Yeah.
Don't you want to hear my voice? Nah. Yeah. So I can say whatever I want about him.
That's right.
Right, I'm just taking. Sorry, editor. But I love a quote from a random person you would never think would do anything to do with beer or cider. Mother Teresa.
I don't think she did actually mean beer or cider when she said this.
Although, do you know what, Claire? Let Matt have it. You know, Mother Teresa was clearly drinking an IPA when she made this.
I'm setting the scene. She's opening up a little stubby can, nah. You know, in a tiny micro pub. You know, she was a small lady, and she said, and she just says, she turns to her drinking companion, and she says, "The Lord likes small things best, especially those done with love." So here's to you, Mother Teresa. Cheers!
Cheers!
I'm not sure. I mean, you're gonna get, if it thunders tomorrow, Matt, and you get struck by lightning, then we're not
exactly.
I didn't say anything bad about it.
You did know it was very
respectful. Respectful about it.
Merry Christmas.
Ever catch yourself eating the same flavorless dinner 3 days in a row? Dreaming of something better? Well, HelloFresh is your guilt-free dream come true, baby. It's me, Keke Palmer. Let's wake up those taste buds with hot, juicy pecan-crusted chicken or garlic butter shrimp scampi. Mm. HelloFresh. Stop dreaming of all the delicious possibilities and dig in at HelloFresh.com. Let's get this dinner party started.
Hey, it's Paige DeSorbo from Giggly Squad. High quality fashion without the price tag. Say hello to Quince. I'm snagging high-end essentials like cozy cashmere sweaters, sleek leather jackets, fine jewelry, and so much more. With Quince being 50 to 80% less than similar brands. And they partner with factories that prioritize safe, ethical, and responsible manufacturing. I love that. Luxury quality within reach. Go to quince.com/style to get free shipping and 365-day returns on your next order. quince.com/style.
How does a free case of beer sound?
Yes, you can grab a case for free courtesy of our pals at Beer 52 by going to www.beer52.com/people, that's the numbers 52 in the 52, and covering the meagre postage cost of £5.95. And what's more, as a special offer for our listeners, they'll throw in 2 extra beers for free, so that's 10 unique craft beers.
Beer 52 is actually the biggest beer club in the world. Each month, they send their members a case of beer from a different part of the world, and this month it's an absolute belter. Their Great European Road Trip case takes in the best beers from across the continent.
So try a crisp, refreshing Pilsner from Norway's Lervig Brewery and a monster 7.5 double IPA from Sweden's Durges Brewery. On the dark side this month, there's a smooth stout from Copenhagen's Tuol. There's also beer from Croatia, Poland, Germany, Serbia and Austria, among others.
And if dark beer's not your thing, you can choose the light-only case. Also included is the ever-insightful Ferment magazine and a couple of tasty snacks. And even if, after all that, you're still unsatisfied, you can simply pause or cancel at any time.
So head over to www.beer52, that's the numbers 5 and 2, .com/people to claim your free case of 10 beers now.